Thank you, Richard, for reading to us tonight from the Sacred Scriptures. We want to engage in a study this evening that I trust will be beneficial to all of us. You know, when you are a preacher of the gospel, you don't worry so much about what to preach because you just preach what's in the Bible. But you do worry about whether or not you can properly plan and execute the preaching of the gospel in such a way as to prove to be beneficial to all of the people in your audience. We have people of understanding in this audience this evening, probably from the fifth or sixth grade on up to almost as old as I am. And as we study such lessons as we're going to study this evening, we will take note of the fact that some of us who are older have known these things what now seems like all of our lives. And yet there are younger generations of people who are constantly coming on, as well as people who are converted from time to time, who never have thought about or discussed or have been taught regarding such matters as we're going to study this evening. And so this evening we are going to... There we go. Got too much up there. We're going to study the Sabbath or the Lord's Day. And we're going to do this in a two-part series. Have you ever wondered why we go to church on Sunday? You say, well, because everybody else does. No, no, no. Everybody else doesn't. The Seventh-day Adventists don't go on Sunday. They go on Saturday. The Seventh-day Baptists, who used to have a college over at Salem, West Virginia, in Harrison County, maybe still control the college. I don't know. They don't go to church on Sunday. They go on Saturday. And in the United States, there are various groups of what we call Sabbatarians, meaning people who worship on the Sabbath, that is, on Saturday, rather than on the Lord's Day. And these people believe with all of their hearts that those of us who worship on Sunday are engaging in a corrupt form of religion, a religion that harkens back, as we'll see to in a few moments, to someone other than our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Now that's what they believe. They're mistaken in that belief, but that's what they believe. And so it is important that we from time to time engage in such doctrinal studies as this. And due to a great deal of false teaching about the acceptable day of worship in the Christian era, that is, in the period of time in which we live, there is great confusion in the minds of people regarding the Sabbath, or what we in the English-speaking world call Saturday, and the Lord's Day, or what we in the English-speaking world call Sunday. Now, there are other people in the world, even in the Western world, who use the very, very same calendar that we do. But they don't call Saturday Saturday, and they don't call Sunday Sunday. For example, if you were memorizing the days of the week of a Spanish calendar, you would notice that when you came to the seventh day, the day we call Saturday, they call it Sábado, because Sábado is the Spanish word for the Sabbath. When you would continue by reciting the name of the day that we call Sunday, you would find that they call that day Domingo, which is a Spanish word meaning the day of the Lord's dominion or the Lord's day. And so, probably English-speaking people are the ones who use these terms, Saturday and Sunday, more frequently. And incidentally, Saturday is the day of Saturn, named for an ancient Greek god, and Sunday is the day for the sun, named after the god of the sun. So actually, we use a little heathenism in our naming of the days of the weeks, as well as some of the months of the year. Poor Constantine, I'm talking about the emperor now, who was crowned emperor in the latter part of the 2nd century at York, England, who seems to be blamed for about everything these days, if you've been paying any attention to the babble that's been going on about the Da Vinci Code. Supposedly, that is according to the teaching of certain Sabbatarians, changed the day of worship for the Christians by an imperial edict. They say that Constantine, just shortly after the Council of Constantinople, along about 326 A.D., changed the day of worship from Saturday to Sunday. There's only one thing wrong with that. Tain't so. Someone sent me not long ago a list of Reaganisms. I don't know what your politics are, but I thought some of these were pretty cute. Reagan said concerning liberals, political liberals, but the same thing is applicable to religious ones. He said, it isn't that liberals are unintelligent. It's just that they know so much that isn't so. Well, the problem is that whoever came up with this idea that Constantine changed the day of worship from Saturday to Sunday just knows something that isn't so. Because Constantine never did do that. As a matter of fact, what he really did was he handed down an imperial decree, emperors are allowed to do that, forbidding manual labor on the Lord's Day, a day which his mother and other Christians had observed as a day of worship for hundreds of years at this particular time. Others teach that some unnamed pope, at some unnamed time, changed the day of worship from the Sabbath to Sunday. And you have a hard time getting them to tell us which pope it was and in what year it happened. Because you see, we can go to such reference books as the Catholic Encyclopedia, which we have up here in our library, and you can look up that pope, look up the period of his reign, and look at what he did each year during the period of his reign, and show that it never happened. And so I have heard some of them say it was Pope Adrian, others say it was Pope the First, some say it was Pope Urban the Second, and some say it was some other pope. The plain fact of the matter is no pope ever did that. And so that's not so either. Those who teach this strange doctrine that we should be worshiping on Saturday rather than on Sunday ignore some very vital information that's found in the Bible. That Jesus met on the first day of the week, the Lord's Day, the day we call Sunday, after his resurrection with his disciples. John chapter 20 verse 19 reads, then the same day at evening, being the first day of the week. Now it isn't by mistake that John tells us what day of the week it was. When the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews, Jesus came and stood in the midst of them and said to them, peace be with you. Someone says, well, when Jesus was alive, he worshiped on the Sabbath. Of course he did. He lived under the law. But Jesus knew, as well as we know, that when he died on the cross, the law was nailed to it, just as Richard read for us this evening from the second chapter of the book of Colossians. And between the time that he resurrected from the dead and ascended back to the Father in heaven, he met with his apostles on the first day of the week, or the day in our calendar that we call Sunday. And so if anybody changed the day of worship, it was the Lord. Now, lest we get the idea that this was a one-time event and never happened again, we must also read from the same chapter, verse 26, these words. And after 8 days, his disciples were again inside. Now, you count 8 days from first day to first day, what do you come to? First day. And Thomas was with them. Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst, and said, peace to you. So twice it is recorded in one chapter. within 10 verses of one another, that the occasions upon which the disciples came together to worship, obviously, and did so secretly because they were afraid of the Jews, Jesus met with them, and the occasion was the first day of the week. Therefore, it was Christ who endorsed the first day of the week as the day of worship, and not Constantine, because we wouldn't pay attention to it if Constantine had done it, and not some Pope Adrian or Urban or some other. But 8 days from Sunday is the next Sunday. Count them up. Furthermore, the early Christians continued. After Jesus ascended back to the Father in heaven, the early Christians continued to meet on this day rather than on the Sabbath. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 7, we read Luke's inspired history of their meeting day in these words. He said, "Now on the first day of the week," when, that's an important adverb, when, don't forget it. On the first day of the week, when, it indicates they were doing something that was customary for them to do at a customary time. On the first day of the week, when the disciples came together to break bread, Paul, ready to depart the next day, spoke to them and continued his message till midnight. Now, sometimes Paul takes a lot of flack, you know, for preaching till midnight. But for aught we know, he didn't start till 11:15. I say that just to stimulate your thinking a little bit. Consequently, the day of worship was changed by Jesus by nailing the law to his cross, and the disciples followed the divine example that he left for them in the 20th chapter of the book of Acts. Friends, these are facts that are hard to overlook. Though the Sabbath was abolished as a part of the law of Moses, some say the portion known as the Ten Commandments was never abolished. Now, why would they say that? They say that because one of the Ten Commandments, as we'll look at it in a little bit, is remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. As a matter of fact, Ellen G. White, who was the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist movement, said that she went into a trance and she was taken to heaven. And while she was in heaven in this trance, she saw on tablets of gold the Ten Commandments. And the fourth commandment was haloed with a great halo of light. And she knew that God meant for her to teach the people that they would worship on Saturday and not on Sunday. I think I've already told you Brother Foy Wallace's story about whether or not Ellen G. White went to heaven, so I won't repeat that, but it's an interesting story, isn't it, ladies? Yet Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 7, said that the ministry of death, which is the law of Moses, was abolished, and the part of it that was that portion that was written and engraved in stone. Note, it was abolished, including the part written and engraved in stone. That can only refer, dear people, to the Ten Commandments. You say, "Well, preacher, why would you say that?" Because none of the rest of the law was written and engraved in stone. The rest of it was written in a book, the Bible tells us. And so if the Bible is true, then the Ten Commandments were abolished. Let's consider biblical information regarding the Sabbath and the Lord's Day as we continue to study this evening. And as we do so, we want to look at two important questions. When was Sabbath given to man? And the second question is, for what purpose was the Sabbath given to man? And next week, God willing, we will study how long was the Sabbath to last. The Sabbath was set up with a time period. And lastly, the prominence of the Lord's Day in the New Testament. When was the Sabbath given to man? Moses brought the law off Mount Sinai to the people, didn't he? The first time man is commanded to keep the Sabbath anywhere in the Bible was in the Ten Commandments. The fourth of those Ten Commandments reads, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Exodus 20 and verse 8. Not only so, but in the commandment, work was limited to 6 days of the week, something that had never been done before. Verses 8 through 10 of the same chapter say, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall not work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. Nobody was to work on Saturday. Furthermore, the reason for limiting work to 6 days of the week was given in these words. For in 6 days the Lord, or Yahweh, made heavens and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and hallowed it. Now I want to pause here long enough to say something. God has restricted leadership in the home and in the church to the male. And he did it because he was created first, and the female was made for him. Now that doesn't mean, ladies, that you are inferior, and that we are superior, and that we can treat you like dogs, or in a piece of furniture, or chattel. It means that when God created things, he made man first. Then he made woman. He made man first because he intended for him to accept the responsibility of leadership, and woe be to the man who abdicates it. Now, having said that, the reason given as to why God observed the Sabbath was because he rested on that day after the creation. He blessed it and hallowed it, that is, declared it to be holy. But that's not the reason the Jews were commanded to keep it. This day of rest was never commanded of anyone during the patriarchal age, before the giving of the law of Moses. You can read the Bible from Genesis chapter 1 and verse 1, clear down to Exodus chapter 1 and verse 1. You never read of anybody keeping the Sabbath, being commanded to keep the Sabbath, or commanding someone else to keep the Sabbath. We learn from Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 through 3, that God rested on that day. But we do not learn that he commanded men to do so. From Nehemiah chapter 9, verses 13 and 14, we learn when the Sabbath law was made known to man. Let's read it. Nehemiah is talking to God in prayer. And he says to God, you came down also on Mount Sinai and spoke with them from heaven and gave them just ordinances and true laws, good statutes and commandments. You made known to them your holy Sabbath and commanded them precepts, statutes, and law by the hand of Moses, your servant. When did God give the Sabbath to mankind? When Moses brought it down off Mount Sinai and gave it to the people of Israel. When was the Sabbath made known? Well, I can't tell you the day of the week or the date or the year, but approximately 2,500 years after God created this earth. It was given when God gave the law on Sinai. To whom was the Sabbath made known? Was it given to all mankind? Well, let's consider this. To answer these questions, we must ask, to whom was the law of Moses given? To Israel or to all mankind? Let's let the Bible answer the question. In Exodus chapter 20, verses 2 and 3, we read these words regarding the God of the universe who brought the people of Israel up out of Egypt. He said, I am the Lord, your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. That, incidentally, is the first commandment. So the preamble to the Ten Commandments given by God Himself is recorded in these words in verse 2. I am the Lord your God who brought you up out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. To whom did he do that? Or for whom did he do it? Israel. Or people today that we broadly refer to as the Jews. We further allow the Bible to answer the question. In Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, we have a repeating of the law of Moses. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2, it is recorded that Moses said, notice, to all Israel. And Moses called all Israel and said to them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and judgments which I speak in your hearing today, that you may learn them and be careful to observe them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. So to whom was the law of Moses given? It was given to Israel. It was never given to the world in general. The Babylonians didn't receive it. The Egyptians didn't receive it. The Assyrians didn't receive it. None of the known nations of the world at that particular time received the greatest law that has ever been given upon the face of the earth until the coming of the gospel of Jesus Christ, except the nation of Israel. Moses, in the same context, he told us exactly to whom God gave the Ten Commandments. When from Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 3 we read, The Lord did not make this covenant with our fathers, but with us, those who are here today, all of us who are alive. Friends, if that doesn't nail it down, it can't be nailed down. Moses said this covenant, which was made by the law of Moses itself, was not given to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob. It was not given to Adam and to Noah and to Enoch and Methuselah. But it was given, Moses said, to us. Us who? Us Israelites. Which Israelites? The ones who are here today. Moses said, all of us who are alive. Of course, a dead man's not under any covenant, is he? If the Ten Commandments, which contained the first commandment to keep the Sabbath, was not made with any of the fathers before Moses received the law, and if it was given only to Israel, then, friends, the Sabbath was given to Israel alone and to no one else. And there cannot be any justification in any Gentile unless he proselyted to the Jews ever keeping it. The law of Moses was given to Israel, so the Sabbath was given to Israel. Now let's review for a moment. Number one, Moses first gave the law of the Sabbath. Number two, he brought it from Mount Sinai to those who came out of Egyptian bondage. Number three, it was for the nation of Israel alone and was never intended for nor given to mankind in general. Moses said, it is for us, all of us who are here alive today. But for what purpose was the Sabbath given? Someone says, well, the Sabbath was given so the Jews would not work on the day that they were to worship. What does the Bible say about it? From Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 15, we read, And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Now, God hallowed the Sabbath because he rested in it. But here's the reason he gave it to the Jews. Remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath. What was Israel's reason for keeping the Sabbath? They had been rescued from Egyptian bondage, and God wanted them to remember that once every week. The Sabbath was given as a weekly reminder to the Jews that they'd been in bondage in the land of Egypt, abject slavery. Secondly, Yahweh had rescued them, bringing them out of the land. The Sabbath was a memorial of that, my friends. Just as the Lord's Supper reminds us every week that Christ rescued us from sin, so the Sabbath reminded the Jews every eighth day that God had rescued them from Egypt. And therefore, it was not given to us. But the keystone passage regarding the purpose of the Sabbath is found in Exodus 31, verses 12 through 17. Let's look first at verses 12 and 13, in which God said, "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, Surely my Sabbath you shall keep." Now listen to the rest of this. "For it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you." The Sabbath was not a sign between God and Nebuchadnezzar. It was not a sign between God and the people of Nineveh to whom Jonah went to preach. God said, "My Sabbath is a sign between me and you throughout your generations." Now, he further recorded in verses 14 and 15 of the same chapter, "You shall keep the Sabbath, therefore, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death, for whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. Work shall be done in 6 days, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day, he shall surely be put to death." That's a pretty strict prohibition, isn't it? But God said, the Sabbath is holy to you. It was holy. It was a holy day for Israel alone. Finally, in Exodus chapter 31, verses 16 and 17, Moses was told, "Therefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." Two very important points here. We have made them already twice tonight, but repetition is the finest form of learning. Number one, it was in a covenant given to Israel and to Israel alone. It was a sign between God and the children of Israel forever. Or as he put it in the previous verses, throughout their generations. So the Sabbath never had any significance, one way or the other, to Gentiles until people began to preach, incidentally, in the last 250 years, their understandings of the Bible. The holy day was given by Moses for Israel alone. Since the church is made up of both Jews and Gentiles, the Sabbath was taken away and another day was given in its place. Nothing can change this divine truth. We've already demonstrated it from the Bible. And so we, when I say we, I mean people living on this side of the cross, are not amenable to the Sabbath today. It is not part of God's dealing with us. Today we live under the gospel of Jesus Christ, which alone provides salvation. You know, I'm kind of happy about that, because every once in a while, though I like to mow the yard earlier in the week, I get between a rock and a hard place and end up having to mow it on Saturday. If I lived under the law of Moses, somebody would stone me to death for that. So I'm kind of happy we're not under that law, aren't you? Incidentally, the people who claim to keep it don't keep it anyway, because on the Sabbath day they were not allowed to travel more than the Sabbath day's journey, which was about 7/10 or 3/4 of a mile. And I have known Sabbatarians who drove 20 miles to church on Saturday. And so today we live under the gospel of Christ, which alone provides salvation. The law of Moses did not do that. And when we believe with all of our hearts that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and repent of all of our sins that took Him to the cross, confess our faith in Him as the Son of God, and are baptized or immersed into His death, we're cleansed by His blood. If after that we should fall away from him, we can return, if we will, by repenting of all the sin that drew us away from Christ, confessing these public sins to a church that loves us, and pray with the brethren for God's forgiveness. And our loving and gracious Father will forgive and restore us to him, just as he forgave and drew us to him in the first place. Whatever your spiritual needs are, we urge you this evening to come to Jesus Christ now as we stand together and sing the song of invitation.